from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out about the new art program that will be filling the halls of the new Wishard.
I'll chat with author Georgia Buchanan about her new memoir.
And then I'll talk with Barb Shoup from the Writers' Center about their new publishing projects. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call...
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news. News from NPR. Nearly 100 years after the artworks of T.C. Steele and others were created to enhance Wishard's healing environment, and 1 year after the community provided input and support for design proposals, Wishard and Eskenazi Health's Art Committee has selected the artists and works of art that will carry forward the art of healing in the new Sidney and Lois Eskenazi Hospital and Eskenazi Health, opening in December 2013. Travis DiNicola spoke with Dr. Lisa Harris, CEO and Medical Director at Wishard, and artist Artur Silva about the project.
Dr. Lisa Harris, Artur Silva, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you both, and fun to see you together. This is really kind of enjoyable for me because you're two of my favorite people, and I love the work that both of you do. Very different work. I mean, Artur, you've been one of my favorite artists for years here in Indianapolis, and Dr. Harris, of course, the work that goes on at Wishard, soon to be Eskenazi, is fantastic. And so, how did you get together, and why are you in our studio at the same time? And how did this all happen, Dr. Harris?
Well, we're delighted to be here, first of all, Travis, and we're here to talk about art and healing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there has been a fair body of work over the last maybe 10 to 20 years demonstrating mm-hmm. the positive impact of art and nature in terms of you know, aiding in the healing experience. Studies that showed an effect on improving blood pressure, reducing anxiety, reducing the need for pain medications.
And we're not talking about art therapy necessarily in terms of patients creating art. We're talking about having art in hospitals.
We're talking about the environment.
The environment itself where the patient's
right.
healing.
And what is remarkable, what we're so grateful for is that this, you know, this has become recognized in fairly recent years, but our predecessors at Wishard understood this 100 years ago.
Right.
T.C.
Steele was
exactly,
a big part of the original Wishard.
Right. So we have had the opportunity of this legacy art project. So at that time, the hospital leaders commissioned St. Margaret's Hospital Guild first just for a mural, for a painting.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started thinking bigger, and they thought, what if we painted murals throughout the hospital, and what if we hung those murals high on the wall so the best vantage point was from the perspective of those individuals lying in the beds, the patients.
Mm-hmm.
And it became one of the best known works, and some think that some of the best work of what then became the Hoosier Group, you know, led by T.C. Steele and his colleagues, Wayman Adams among them. That some of that best work was painted on the walls of
100 years ago.
100
yeah.
years. In fact, we'll be vacating when mm-hmm. we move into our new hospital campus. The end of 2013, we will be vacating a building that's 100 years old in which we're still caring for patients. And we think it's our responsibility to carry that legacy forward. And just as they worked to have a mm-hmm. project, a program that reflected the diversity of the patients served by the hospital at that time, it's our responsibility, and it's our we're very happy to have the opportunity to carry that forward, and with a public art program that speaks to our community now, that resonates with the diversity of our community,
yes.
just as that project did 100 years ago.
Let me ask you this, Dr. Harrison, that is, Because the planning for the new Wishard to be Eskenazi Health has been going on for quite a while now. I mean, the planning and then the vote and then the preparation for it and groundbreaking and all of this stuff. At what point did you and the rest of the people planning this know that you wanted to make art part of this from the ground floor, in a right. sense?
We knew from the beginning, again, yeah. because of this remarkable legacy that we have mm-hmm. been that we've been able to carry forward. We've worked over years through we've used donated money to mm-hmm. restore these murals and to take the murals off the wall to frame them. So we've been caring for what we think is a community treasure mm-hmm. For years. And so it felt only natural to plan this from the beginning. And it was actually about okay. 2 years ago that we put together a jury of both local experts and experts from across the country, some who are mm-hmm. responsible for art projects in other hospitals. And we put together that group. We put out a request for proposals. We had over 500 responses.
I remember about a year ago at the City Market, there was a great unveiling of some of the proposals and mm-hmm. looking at artists from all over the world that had submitted pieces and everything from paintings to installations and sculpture and all types of video work. It was just amazing.
And what we also amazed us was the extent of the community input that we received. Mm-hmm. We wanted to get the input and the thoughts of what the broad community that we serve. And so we had, as you said, we whittled that down. We had just over 500 responses. The jury kind of narrowed that down to, I think, 54 projects. Mm-hmm. And we took those to the community through both the displays at the City Market and also on our website. And for our employees, we had them pictures in the hallways at Wishard and at our community health centers. And overall, we received over 3,000 comments, and they were very well thought out. Folks put effort into. They were very thoughtful, and we appreciated that. It was the same kind of engagement that we felt when we, with the referendum, the 85% overwhelming vote in support of the new Wishard, now Eskenazi, or soon to be Eskenazi, hospital. And so it was that same sense of community engagement and connection. And again, just a lot of great thoughtful input.
So let's talk about Archer's involvement here. Archer, many people in town know your work, whether it's through the 46 for 46, the Super Bowl murals, you've participated in that. Lots of other great public art murals that you've done, these very colorful prints, often sort of mirror images, lots of pop culture, sometimes yourself in these images. Very fun work, very bright, very colorful. But you're going to be doing something else a little bit different for you with what you're going to be doing at Eskenazi Health. And I'm really excited to hear that you've been selected as one of the artists. I think that's tremendous to have, especially such a well-renowned local artist, be a part of this, Dr. Harris, because I know you've got artists, again, from all over the world that are going to be doing this. But
right, and we have some of the best and brightest from right here in Indiana and Indianapolis, and we're very excited about Archer's participation. One thing that struck me, and I'm wondering if you'd be willing to speak to this, but I know as we were, as he was describing his project initially, he talked about how it was formed. Some of his thoughts were informed. His approach was informed by having spent time at his father's bedside in a hospital, and so understanding, up close and personal, what art can, the opportunity that art presents
within a hospital. Archer, please.
Well, thanks for having me here again at WFYI. It's always a pleasure. The first and foremost, I was excited to be involved with a project that was so, so insightful and had such a sensibility to consider the origins of the hospital in 14 and to continue the tradition of, collecting art for a hospital, which is a rather delicate thing to do. My father unfortunately passed in a hospital, and mm-hmm. I remember clearly it was the walls of the hospital were green for some reason, like pale green, you know.
That tends to be a hospital color.
Right. Yeah. It was a very, very cold environment, and there was not a single piece of art anywhere. And, you know, on the last trip to the hospital, I remember my father looking out of the car with, you know, and kind of like, in retrospect, you know, it was his last experience in the world, right? the last visual experience he's having, and then, you know, into the hospital. And for in his case, you know, not everybody who walks into a hospital will go through such traumatic experience, but he ends up dying at a hospital. And, you know, I thought a lot about that while, you know, elaborating this project. And, you know, his visual experience within the hospital could have been different.
Yeah.
And it was a challenge for me to create, and Dr. Harris and I and Michael Kaufman and the other folks, the administrators, we've talked about, I mentioned not wanting to create art that was hospital art. Because I think art can do so much more, you know. It can go much beyond the limitations of, you know, the thematic of healing, I think, to me, is a much deeper, you know, a process. And art can do that. And so my mission was to not create art that was like art for a hospital, but that took the hospital in the context of that the process of creating it.
And so you've come up with, I mean, my understanding is this sort of like international quilt theme that you're working into the piece.
Yeah, yeah. I have a hardest time, and I shouldn't mention this word again, but plurality.
Plurality,
yes. well, English.
Easier too. To write than say sometimes.
Right, yeah, yeah. I always write this word in connection to my work, because my work is really, I'm here in the Midwest because of my work. This sort of, you know, elusive idea of the American experience was part of my childhood.
Growing up in Brazil.
Growing up in Brazil, yes. And we were, you know, just a brief context, we were under a dictatorship that was sponsored by the United States. So the media, you know, everything I watched on TV, listened to in the radio, was American programming. And so that curiosity is more than natural, right? And so that's my research about this American experience led me to be here in the Midwest. So naturally, you know, this juxtaposition of my background, my childhood, my culture, both as Brazilian and as American now.
Yes.
It's always present in my work. And I think in this case, I researched patterns of textile from all over the world, you know, from Indonesia to Latin America to patterns from America, from the United States, from the 60s, and quilts, traditional, like, I didn't know this, but states have official quilts, quilt patterns, and that was very interesting. So I included all of this information within these two prints that I have developed, and to sort of, you know, expand that thematic.
Well, I think Archer makes an excellent point, and that is about the power of art not simply to reassure and to calm, but to inspire. And I think creating that inspiring environment is something that I imagine will be helpful as we work to help people think about things a different way. That, you know, in our arts, you know, especially seeing beautiful public art in a place where you might not expect it, has the opportunity to sort of knock people off center and have them start thinking things in a different way.
And Archer's work will be on the fifth floor in sort of the outpatient area for the OBGYN,
yes,
I believe, and
yes,
the waiting room area there. It's going to be really interesting to, I mean, I'm looking forward to seeing the hospital, of course, as everyone is when it opens, but are you planning to have any sort of like art tours, or has that been thought through yet? Or
We will be having a whole array of tours focusing on all aspects of the hospital. The other thing we're excited about is the environmental sustainability will be lead.
That's right. That's right. And the gardens I've heard much about that too as well, right. Which is very exciting. Yeah. So this is really just the first phase too, Dr. Harris, of the art project with Eskenazi Health. And there's actually other phases that will be coming with other artists that will be announced and other projects. Is that correct?
Right. And we will be doing that over the course of the summer. There mm-hmm. actually is one other artist who's part of this first phase that I think speaks to this connection to the community.
Please.
And that is Richard Ross, who is a photographer. And he has come, he's sort of taken on the spirit of those first, the T.C. Steeles and his group. The sort of the centerpiece of that project were the Four Seasons, the mm-hmm. murals. And so he's coming to Indianapolis and on a photographic tour in each of the seasons. But what's unique about this tour is that he's arming Indianapolis public school children with Diana cameras, these cameras that are very low tech. They take sort of very ethereal, dreamy images, and he's working with the students on photo shoots. Actually, Michael's son has been
Michael
part of this
Coughlin.
Group.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then the group will work to create murals of the images that they take both on their photo shoots, and then between sessions he has
How
them
neat.
they have the cameras to take pictures of their community, and then they'll be all pulled together in murals that will be on also in the outpatient center. So another community connection that we're very excited about.
And also, twice now we've referred to Michael Kaufman, who is the Director of Special Projects and Civic Investment for the Health and Hospital Corporation of Marion County, and I know has been very involved in making this project happen.
So absolutely.
A lot of people have been, but definitely want to thank him. Now, and one thing I want to be clear about is some of those T.C. Steeles we're still going to get to see, right? They're going to just move over? And
absolutely. We'll be bringing them back, mm-hmm. and we'll be displaying them in a way that is very accessible to the public. We want this collection to mm-hmm. be highly accessible to, and we've chosen from a very diverse group of artists to have work that speaks to all members of our community, and we want them to be able to enjoy it.
Travis DiNicola with Dr. Lisa Harris, CEO and Medical Director at Wishart, and artist Artur Silva. Visit EskenaziHealth.org, that's E-S-K-E-N-A-Z-I health.org, to learn more about all the artists who are a part of the new Wishart. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
If you've been in Indianapolis for a few years, the name Georgia Buchanan probably evokes images of events raising money for good causes. But during the decades leading up to the present, Georgia Giannakos Buchanan was the daughter of Greek immigrants, and she tells the stories of breaking through the glass ceiling in several journalistic media and meeting hundreds of fascinating people in her new memoir, 428 and a Half, My Journey Beyond the Railroad Tracks, a book rich with details about the history of our city. Sharon Gamble invited Georgia to our studios to talk about the book, and she began by reading the first page.
He was on a mission. It was bone-chilling January afternoon. The temperatures hovered just above freezing. Snowflakes swirled down from the gray skies, meeting and sticking on the already slippery streets, walking confidently with steady strides along South Illinois Street was the 17-year-old boy. He was oblivious to the cold that was cutting through his slim body like a knife. While avoiding the snow piles with his footsteps, his eyes were focused in a direct gaze ahead. His goal was within reach. He was in downtown Indianapolis, Indiana. The year was 1920.
And, of course, you weren't around to observe this, but this young boy who was, I feel the cold when you read that, he was your father.
Of course, yes.
And what were the circumstances that led him to Indianapolis, of all places?
Well, many people have asked me that. It was because his dad had come here. His dad had preceded him, I think it was about 6 years before, and his dad came down only because a couple of friends from his village had other relatives here. There was no, planning ahead that their destination was America. They came to Chicago because that's where most of the Greeks went on a train from New York to Chicago. Mm-hmm. His dad had a couple of buddies who had relatives in Indianapolis, so his dad came here. So he followed his dad, even though he told him he would stay home in the village to take care of his mother and his sister. He didn't listen, and he came. He was full of adventure.
Well, thank goodness he did. And that sense of adventure, he passed along to you. I don't know about, you don't say that much about your siblings, but I have the sense that the lion's share of that, the chromosomes for adventure and courage, got passed down to you.
An awful lot of it, because I see a lot of my dad in me. When people say, where did you ever get your guts? Where did you ever get, you know, this spirit and so forth? And plus, I think, you know, I think the lineage within a family makes a difference. I had an older sister, and so many times the oldest child is expected to toe the line and obey the rules, mm-hmm. and, you know, and kind of be mom's friend. And then right after me was my brother, who was very close to my dad. And they eventually worked together. And then there was the younger sister that everybody sort of took care of, you know. And here I was left kind of floundering in the middle.
You got to make your own
exactly.
journey.
Exactly. Sure. So, you know, it brought out the spirit in me. And so I took off here and there.
One of the things I like most about this memoir is the really palpable sense of history. You've included so many details. I moved from Los Angeles to Indianapolis as a young teenager in the 1970s and became fascinated by the city. And I love the details that you have in the book. And, you know, you're describing, especially in your childhood, some places that have altered to the point where anyone driving around West and Washington
exactly.
Street would have no idea that the district was there
no.
or what it was like.
No, they really don't. I think, and it's really a part of Indianapolis history that I don't think has been properly recorded and even talked about. It was interesting when I was searching for pictures of, you know, to incorporate into my book, and I went to the History Center, and we found that there were very few even photographs of West Washington Street, which was the main street that the district, you know, ran through. So when I showed them a picture of my dad's restaurant, which was at 470 West Washington, which is just a block east of where the Idle George Museum stands today, they were just could not believe it.
Thank goodness you had those photos. Mm-hmm. You were part of a group of kids who, as is true with, I'm sure, any group of immigrants going to any new country, you find people you have something in common with, common language, common heritage. But you like to mix it up a little bit, and you got off the beaten path, and you lived in a couple of worlds at any given time, and that kind of continued throughout your life. I have a playwright friend who's very fond of saying that for a writer, it's very useful to be an outsider.
I think that's probably true. You become the observer. You know, so often people kind of sleepwalk through life, and they don't really look left and right. But I think when you can sit back and observe what's going on, I think mentally I was taking notes from a very young age. I truly was.
There's a sense of, through the book as well, of the little girl who at first was window shopping at places like Wasson's and Bloch's and Ayers, mm-hmm. who knew that, but you had a sense, and so will your readers, that one day you were going to be able to walk in those stores, put that pendant on layaway, and spend a year paying it off.
My mom, till her dying day, we talk about that that pin that I bought. I still have it, and it's still my favorite piece of jewelry. And I guess that was kind of the sign of what was to come with me, I guess. I found a way, I guess, whatever I wanted to do.
You are a rebel, girl.
Or a bi, you know. And I didn't think I was such a rebel. I think growing up, you don't see yourself that way. You just sort of do what you feel like you want to do.
Sure.
But then reflecting, you know, back, my mom said, oh, yeah, you were the one we had to tame.
I hope she said that with a sense of humor and some love.
Oh, yeah. Well, we had a fabulous relationship. Yeah.
So The other thing that people may not know about earlier Indianapolis is that the location of Manual High School changed.
Yes, it did. Yeah, yes, it did.
You
it
went to School 5, which no longer exists except for the facade preserved.
Yeah, that's in the State Museum now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then you went to Manual High School, which was?
On Merrill Street. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it was just where South Street is today. It was just another block south. That's where Manual was. And I think I relate in the book that we always walked. A lot of people find that incredulous, that we would walk to school that far all the time. And it was a good mile and a half to, you know, even to get to Meridian and then south on Meridian to Merrill. And we would cut through, of course, the air store, especially during the winter, just to get warm. Mm-hmm. We'd do that on the way back because it wasn't open in the morning, but Union Station was open. And if we were a little early, we would cut through both ways. And it was just my introduction, I think, to a lot of the structures, historic buildings downtown.
Sure. In the middle of your high school years, your family did this wonderful thing. They moved to a much bigger residence. You got your own bedroom, and even though the closet was in the hallway, you were delighted
hooray.
To have your own bedroom finally.
Hooray, hooray.
However, it meant transferring from Manual to Shortridge, which sounds wonderful, but the downside of transferring in the middle of high school is what?
I think it's difficult, I think, any time.
Yeah.
You know, I think it still exists today because you've already established bonds with your other schoolmates. You're kind of in a rhythm. You know your teachers. You sort of know what to expect. But with us, it wasn't just a new high school. It was a completely different environment of, you know, you're moving from the south side or west side of town like we did to the north side, which was kind of an elite neighborhood. And as I say in the book, everybody dressed different. They talked different. They were just very different than the children that I grew up with, the kids that were all children of immigrants. And I just found it very difficult to blend in. And by the time you got it, maybe even a little comfortable, the 2 years were up and it was time to graduate.
Darn it.
Yeah. You're out of there.
Through your childhood, part of how your parents spoke Greek in the home, but you hung out in your dad's restaurant and retrieved newspapers before they were thrown away, took them home and stayed up by the light of the streetlight reading them. That's part of how you got a great vocabulary in English. But also, there was something about journalism that was calling to you.
I think that really truly the seed came from those newspapers. It opened the world to me that there was other things going on in the world except instead of just my being in my little Greek world, and I could read about all these places. A lot, of course, I didn't understand when I was a child, but it just made me yearn to be part of this broader world, and it came to me through the newspapers. I could see the pictures, and later on when I learned to read, I was, reading. So I think that was the seed right there that I, read and reread all the articles and the seed was planted that someday this is what I wanted to do.
So it was no surprise that after high school you marched yourself downtown. And tell us about that meeting where you tried to get a job.
Of course, I just wanted to write, and I thought, well, I've read a lot of newspapers, so I should now have a job, and I didn't need to go to college. I always thought you'd go to college because then you would learn what to do, and that's what you would learn, to live, to earn a living.
Sure.
And I thought, well, I want to work for paper, so why not just start right now, save my dad a lot of money, going to college. And so, gutsy me, I go down there, and then I had this low blow when they told me that they never hired anyone to write for a paper without a journalism degree. But I didn't know that I had really made an impression on the executive at the newspaper because I did have the guts to go in there and ask for a job. I knew what I wanted. And so, okay, I'll see you in 4 years. And sure enough, 4 years I came back.
And there was a job.
And there was a job. It was a little, it wasn't the job I wanted in the newsroom originally. It was in promotion. But like I said, I had my foot in the door. I could walk through those doors that I wanted to walk through so many years. And I had a job with this large, it was the state's largest newspaper, the Indianapolis Star. And then it became the Indianapolis Star News.
Mm-hmm. For our younger listeners who maybe are at journalism school right now where women often outnumber men, there was a time when being a woman in the newsroom was kind of startling. It was a rarity.
It was a rarity. And they almost looked upon us as almost temporary employees because the thinking was at that time that women, most women, even with a college degree, they really didn't go out in the workforce. They got married. They found their mates in college. They were married right out of school, and they didn't have careers. And, of course, I wanted that career, but and there were so few of us around that really wanted to pursue it. And we were almost told that we would earn less because, again, we would be gone. We would get married, we would get pregnant, and we would leave. So they didn't look at us as a long-term investment.
Why invest in you? Sure,
yeah,
sure.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, you proved that wrong.
Yeah, I did.
You just kept going. And I'm not going to reveal everything because we want people to buy and read the book, but... looking back, did you have any foreshadowing as a child that your career would end up being as far flung as it was?
No. I think I would have been, my goal was really to simply to write for a newspaper. And I think if it had just stayed at that, I think I would have probably been content. But then, as I grew and realized this larger world around me and going to Europe on that trip that I set aside my vacation time at the news and went to Europe. For 6 weeks. That was a long time. Then I really realized that, wow, this could be something a lot bigger than being in Indianapolis.
What do you want to do that you haven't done yet?
There's a lot more travel places I like to go. I haven't done. I have this hidden ambition. I'd love to learn how to play a guitar.
A guitar?
I would love to do
really?
That. I played a violin, as a child,
which
I mentioned. But I just think that, I'd love to be able to play a classical guitar. That's always been kind of one of my hidden things. But other than that, I think there's places in the world I still haven't seen. I'd like to go. And I better hurry up because the legs aren't what they used to be. But I keep going. But I think I've been fortunate that so many of my dreams have come true. And if I dream ahead about anything, it's just I just want the son to keep well and to have a good life after me.
Well, maybe the next time you're in for an interview, it'll be because you've released your first guitar album.
Well, don't hold your breath, but you never know.
Sharon Gamble with Georgia Giannakos Buchanan. Her colorful new memoir, 428 and a Half, My Journey Beyond the Railroad Tracks, chronicles not only her first 85 years, but also some of the most fascinating events of the history of Indianapolis. To order the book, contact the author at GeorgiaGTT@AOL.com. Let me repeat that for you. It's GeorgiaGTT. That's GeorgiaGTT@AOL.com.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon?
I have a really important answer to the question, what'll we do for this week's calendar?
Sounds like Jeopardy.
It sounds like Jeopardy. But first of all, if you're a new listener, you may not know, but here's that calendar segment we call What'll We Do? This is where we tell you all the things you should go and do. And the thing you should do this weekend
yes?
is stop by. You already know this, Travis, but you should stop by the new Indy Reads Books on Mass Ave, which just had its grand opening this Friday morning. Congratulations. I'm amazed you're still
standing.
Thanks,
Sharon. So am I. Well, we are thrilled to be open and want everyone to come on down. It is a great community bookstore and a great stage for lots of author events and music events, as well as lots of great books.
And it is at, the address is?
911 Mass Avenue.
911 Mass Ave.
On the Cultural Trail.
Woohoo! Very good. Very close to places where you might go dine or
Black Market or Bistro.
You
Best
might
Chocolate
buy some
in town.
Chocolates at Best Chocolate in
Mass
Town.
Mass Ave Wine Shop, all just after. Right around the corner there.
Exactly.
Right on the street.
Cool.
Yeah, well, thank you, Sharon. Well, lots of other great stuff going on, too. And one of my favorite events each summer is when the ISO, the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, performs for free at Ellenberger Park. And that is coming up this week on Tuesday, July 17th at 7:30 at Ellenberger Park. And that's located, of course, on the east side of Indianapolis in the Irvington neighborhood. And they're going to have Cleveland Orchestra's assistant conductor, James Fedick, will be the guest conductor that night. And there'll be lots of great music, Rimsky-Korsakov, Dvorak, lots of other great music. Get there early to get a good seat.
And you like it because it's in your neighborhood.
And
Ellenberger Park is fabulous. They have a great hill for rolling down.
Yes, or sledding during the winter.
If we ever get snow again, I'm just saying. Hey, if you like Billy Joel, I'm going to stay on the concert theme for a minute. If you like Billy Joel, you can go to the Garfield Park McAllister Amphitheater next Friday night. That's July 20th for an 8 o'clock concert. It's called An Innocent Band, a tribute to Billy Joel. Great cover band. $10 at the gate, $8 online, pre-sale ticket, and kid appropriate, so you can take the whole family. Once again, that's Friday night, July 20th, 8 o'clock at Garfield Park at the McAllister Amphitheater.
Another one of my favorite summer events is when the Heartland Actors Repertory Theater, otherwise known as HART, puts on their Shakespeare on the Canal each summer at the White River State Park, and they are doing Othello this year, with performances coming up on July 20th and 21st at 8 p.m., and then on Sunday the 22nd at 2 p.m., and these are all free, and they take place, again, right at the White River State Park in sort of their Celebration Plaza Amphitheater. It's very cool, sort of right across the street from Victory Field and near the Idle Jorgen, the NCAA Hall of Champions, and all that sort of stuff. Great place to go and see some great theater. Othello coming up next weekend.
Speaking of theater, you may think you know the musical Cabaret from the iconic film starring Liza Minnelli as Sally Bowles, but if you want to see and hear it in a whole new light, check out the Athenaeum Theater as the venue. It's Bob Direk's production of Cabaret through July 21st with Claire Wilcher as Sally Bowles. Yep, Claire Wilcher. And if you're familiar with Bob Direk's, Bob Harbin's company's productions that are good for teens, this is not one of those. This has this has a very grown-up slant. Exactly,
yes.
It is Cabaret. Good point. Running through July 21st at the Athenaeum Theater.
Hey, another great bookstore that has great events is Book Mamas in Irvington. And among their many events going on in July, coming up on Monday the 16th at 6:30 p.m., a read-aloud event with author Michael Hardesty, and he will be reading from his new children's book, Honey Bun and Chip, and everyone is welcome to attend. And that, unlike Cabaret, is good for kids.
There you go, exactly right. Hey, back to Shakespeare for a moment. IU Summer Theater Festival is continuing with The Taming of the Shrew through July 28th, featuring our own Indianapolis artist Rob Johansson. So you could see two great Shakespeare productions this month.
Yeah, that's a great summer theater program down in Bloomington. A lot of great shows that they're doing in rep this summer. Sharon, last thing that I've got, the Porcelain Art School of Indiana is hoping an open house for the public on Wednesday, July 25th from 1 to 3 at the Sheraton Indianapolis City Center Hotel, where you can see all sorts of hand-painted porcelain, and there'll be artists there and lectures and all sort of stuff. So if you're into porcelain, check this out. Sharon, very good. We will be back next week with more on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The Writers' Center of Indiana is known for offering workshops and lectures for aspiring authors, but now they're going to expand their program by starting a publishing imprint. Travis DiNicola spoke with the Writers' Center's Barb Shoup to find out more.
Always great stuff going on with the Writers' Center, and of course workshops and lectures and lots of great resources for writers. And I do want to talk about that in a minute, as far as getting caught up on what else you're doing this summer. But what I'm really excited about is this new publishing venture, In Words. Is that what it's called?
That's what it's called.
So tell me about this, because this is a whole new deal for the Writers' Center.
It is. It's fun. We have been doing some memoir projects as part of our outreach at the Writers' Center, and we found that we were getting getting such wonderful writing that we really wanted to get it out there. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy now to do the, you know, the print on demand publishing and relatively inexpensive and end up with a really lovely little book. So the first one that we did is called Returning. Okay. It came out this spring, and it's the result of a memoir project that we did with the Indianapolis Senior Center. It's about 9 or 10 writers. They had a variety of kinds of topics that they wrote about with a poet, Sherry Wagner, who teaches mm-hmm. for us a lot. And they were just so wonderful that we felt like people needed to read these. And a lot of people want to write about their lives. They don't know where to start. And a lot of the things that people wrote were small things, not necessarily big dramatic things, but small moments in their lives. And Sherry put together the book in a way that really makes it useful to other people, in the sense that she wrote a wonderful essay at the front of the book to sort of, I don't know, just talk about where memory is and mm-hmm. you know, the idea of returning to other times and places of your life. Then she wrote up all the exercises that the writers did with examples, you know, that the reader could look at, and some of citing the various kinds of essays that the people had read in class. So it's actually a nifty little textbook.
That sounds great.
Yeah,
now the work
cool.
that Sherry did with the Senior Center, is that one of the sort of the outreach workshops that you do?
Yeah. We've been doing a variety of those kinds of things over the last couple of years. We've mm-hmm. done them with the girls' school while that was still here. We did a veterans one. We do summer programs that, you know, result in little books from the kids. But
and these are writing workshops designed for people who maybe don't think of themselves as writers.
That's exactly right. And what we want to do is bring forth the kind of voices that people don't usually hear. Mm-hmm. Also, I think people don't write letters anymore. And the kinds of things that they write in these memoir projects are the kinds of things that people used to write in letters.
Yeah.
Just accounts of ordinary days. So I feel like they're going to be of some value at some point to historians, because they really do create a picture of what it's like to live now and what it was like to live, you know, 50 years ago or whatever.
That's very neat. So the first book published under In Words is called Returning. Mm-hmm. And now people can get that through the Writers' Center?
They can get it through the Writers' Center. Mm-hmm. If they go to our website, it's available. That's www.indianawriters.org. Mm-hmm. So we can mail it out to them. And it's also available on Amazon.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. So not to stop at just one.
No.
You're like, keep on going.
Keep going.
And this one, I'm of course, because anyone who listens to Art of the Matter knows that I'm a huge fan of mysteries. And so in the next few weeks, you're publishing Writing Murder. Is that correct?
Yeah, we are. It came out of a class that we did. Actually, Travis, your mother was in that class.
I remember that.
As you may remember. we were working with Jim Wong when he had the wonderful Mystery Company bookstore up in Carmel.
Sure.
And he had all these fabulous connections, and also Suzanne Harding, who's a mystery writer who worked mm-hmm. with him. So he was able to bring in for each class a different mystery writer from somewhere around in the Midwest, Indiana mm-hmm. primarily, but also Chicago, Minneapolis, and so we had these amazing writers like William Kent Kruger, Terrence Faherty, who's from here, mm-hmm. Jean Dams, Libby Fisher-Hellman, Tony Perona, Phil Dunlap, and some others, and each one of them gave a lecture on some aspect of craft.
Okay.
So what we ended up doing, and this was really the work of Suzanne Harding, who edited the book, and said that the reason it was so important to her was because this was the book she wanted to read when she first started writing mystery, that it's, you know, it was what she was always looking for. And so each one of them very kindly wrote up their lectures and submitted
great.
Them and allowed us to use them to create this anthology of pieces by some really successful mystery writers.
Well, and as you said, I mean, you mentioned a lot of great writers, a lot of writers who live in this area or this region that are well-known mystery writers. And as you mentioned, my mom took that class. I heard great things about those workshops. And
they're fun.
So that's terrific that you're able to now have this down on paper and share it with other people. And so that one's titled Writing Murder. And so that's the second publication coming out from the Writers' Center, In Words. What else do you think is on the horizon for you?
Well, I don't know. I like the idea of publishing books about writing that are mm-hmm. practical for people who are not necessarily looking for an academic treatment of something, more hands-on.
Sure.
And including the writing of people who are not necessarily writers, but whose voices come out quite nicely mm-hmm. in the pieces that they write. And it's, you know, it's all about kind of tricking your head into the place where the words will come out, and they will come out in your own voice. So I think that's kind of where we are with this. We're not going to take any submissions for poetry, fiction, or any other kind of thing. Okay. And we're not really taking submissions for these kinds of books either. These are books that are kind of growing
kind of
naturally from the work that we do. You know, what we do is not academic. It's very practical, and it's kind of a hands-on approach, and I think people like that. I was looking for that when I first started writing.
No, that makes a terrific amount of sense.
Yeah, and I have to say, I've copy-edited this book a number of times, most recently just the other day, and every time I read it, I think, this is really good. Mm-hmm. And it would also be useful to anybody who wants to write fiction, not necessarily only crime fiction, mm-hmm. because I think, bottom line, every book is a mystery. In a way,
I agree.
You know, there doesn't have to be a body for it to be a mystery, mm-hmm. and so any book that makes us want to turn the pages, there's some sort of mystery at the center of it.
Exactly.
So, you know, all these different articles or essays on character setting, plot, pacing, they're all very useful to any person who is interested in writing fiction. And my favoritely titled chapter, which is Breaking and Entering, which is about how to break into the, you know, the publishing world. So I think that's pretty funny.
Nice.
It has some funny kind of chapter things like killer endings and tick, 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 which is about suspense, a chalk outline, DOA, scene of the crime. So, you know, it's a little tongue-in-chick in places. It's fun.
But I'm looking forward to reading
book.
This.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. You'll have to give it to your mom.
Yeah, I know. Well, maybe she won't be listening right now, and I can surprise her with it. So I can get it through the Writers Center website.
You can get it through the Writers
Center.
Yep. Mm-hmm. If we'll have a page. It'll be in our store mm-hmm. on the Writers Center website, which, again, is www.indianawriters.org.
Okay.
It will also be, we're having a book launch on Saturday, the 28th of July at 2 o'clock at Barnes & Noble at Clearwater Crossing. And so that will be a kind of an author panel, and it will be a part of the Sisters in Crime monthly meeting,
which is a great group of
Sisters in Crime is fabulous.
Fans,
actually, it's a
writers, it's
a national organization with a very active Indianapolis chapter. So mm-hmm. if anybody's interested in writing this kind of fiction, they should definitely check with them. It's very inexpensive to join, and they have lots of great materials. It's www.sistersincrime.org. And then we'll also be at the Magna Cum Murder Conference in Muncie in October, which is, again, for anybody who's interested in this kind of writing, a terrific opportunity. And a really good friend of mine, who's a mystery writer, S.J. Roseanne, is the mm-hmm. guest of honor. And I can tell you, she is a great teacher and a great speaker. So you would want to see her. And that's www.magnumcummurder.com.
Cool.
And that's in Muncie.
I want to remind listeners that this is Art of the Matter, of course, and I'm Travis D. Nicole. I'm here with Barb Shoup, author, and also from the Writers Center of Indiana. And just to get that out there again, Barb, the book launch for Writing Murder is taking place at the Clearwater Barnes & Noble Saturday, July 28th. What time again?
At 2 p.m.
2 p.m. Very cool. Okay, that's great.
We'd love to see you.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to that as well. Tell me what else is going on with the Writers Center.
Right now, we're up to our ears in summer programs, which I love because my background is a teaching background, and we work every summer with usually three different groups. This year, we're working with La Plaza and their Leadership Institute that they have in the summer. We're working with the St. Florian Center. They have a leadership camp, and that's a wonderful organization that is run by firefighters.
Wow.
It's really cool. It's a 20-year-old program, and it's, you know, serves about 100 kids every year. And then we're also working with the Concord Neighborhood Center.
Okay.
Their summer camp. So we have a little program that's called Building a Rainbow, and it's about, you know, kind of trying to teach the kids that it you know, takes a lot of steps to make something beautiful, and it's fun to work with them. So we have them writing about their lives and just thinking about the small moments that have mm-hmm. made a difference to them. Sometimes they just write really funny things. Sometimes they, you know, it's sad and they cry, but it is real.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we are in the process of collecting, you know, we'll collect all the writing from the three groups and publish a little book of their writing. So that's actually, that is the third thing that's coming up. And so that'll be just called I Remember, and that will be available also through the Writers Center and eventually on Amazon. It takes a while to get them up on Amazon, but it will be there eventually.
Now, I know that the Writers Center usually does a workshop for aspiring writers right around New Year's, sort of a New Year's resolution
yeah,
workshop.
Yeah, we have a New Year's resolution.
Do you do a mid-year follow-up on that at all?
Like... You know, we should. Middle of the year, what did you get done? Workshop. Probably no one would come. You I don't know.
Maybe you should call them up, knock on your door. Yeah. What have you been doing? You
know? I always like to do that. That's a fun program. Everybody, you know, you get geared up in the first of the year to do something you've been meaning to do forever, and it's good to get a bunch of people together and you know, kind of whip them up into a frenzy of inspiration. And then we'll have our gathering of writers also, which will be November 10th this year.
Okay.
Saturday, November 10th. And we are having African-American poet Allison Joseph, who will be our keynote speaker, and about probably 10 or 12 of some of Indiana's best writers to do workshop sessions throughout
Excellent.
The day. Yeah, it's a fun day.
That's great. That's great. Well, we'll definitely have to mention that again as we get closer to that date in November.
That would be good.
Barb, I want to ask you before we go. I know that you've got a book coming out this fall. Can you give us a little heads up on
it? I'm
that?
Excited.
A
yes.
Yeah.
It's a novel, and I've done a lot of things for young people. This is a grown-up book. Mm-hmm. It's called An American Tune. It's being published by Indiana University Press, which makes me really happy because I am an IU grad and have a big history with Indiana University. It's a 60s novel. It's a story about a woman who went underground in the, I guess, really early 70s and created a whole life apart from the life that she started as a young person. Nobody knew that she had this other life. And then at a certain point, that life starts to unravel. And it's set both in Bloomington and also up in northern Michigan, which I love, up near Sleeping Bear Dunes.
Sure.
And so it's kind of about how we ended up who we are, you know, those of us in the baby boomers generation. And it was an interesting book to write, going back and forth in time. And I felt like I was 18 a lot of the time, and it was kind of disconcerting, but I enjoyed doing it, and I hope people will like it.
Well, I look forward to reading that and having you on the show again then to talk about the book when that comes out as well.
I would love to do that.
Yeah. Barb, thank you so much for coming in to Art of the Matter. It's always a pleasure.
I love it.
Okay. Well,
thank
we
you.
Will talk with you soon.
Excellent.
Travis DiNicola with the Writers Center of Indiana's Barb Shoup. To find out more about the center and their new publishing imprint, you can go to indianawriters.org, indianawriters.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 when I'll find out about the Eiteljorg in a New York City art exhibit.
And we'll also have food writer Jolene Ketzenberger join us for guest piece, and I'll chat with community arts organizer Jim Walker.
And we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.